difficult than it looks, explained the boy. Mulch cranked open his massive jaws, pouring the whole pile down in one swallow. After several minutes chewing, he reached an entire hand into his mouth and dislodged a chunk of roast turkey.
Next time, more mustard, he said,
brushing some crumbs from his shirt and in the process inadvertently switching on the mic clipped there.
You're welcome, said Artemis.
You should be thanking me, Mud Boy, said Mulch. I came all the way from Chicago to save your life. Surely that's worth one lousy sandwich. And when I say sandwich, I mean that in the loosest sense of the word.
Chicago? John Spyro sent you?
The dwarf shook his head.
Possibly, but not directly. I work for the Antonelli family. Of course, they have no idea that I'm an actual fairy dwarf. They think I'm simply the best cat burger in the business.
Chicago's district attorney has linked the Antonellis to Spyro in the past. Or rather, he's tried to.
Whatever. Anyway, the plan is that I break in here, and then my partner encourages you to accompany us to Chicago.
Butler was leaning against the table.
Where is your partner now, Mulch? Outside the gate. He's the small, angry one. Glad to see you're alive, by the way, big man. There was a rumor going around the underworld that you were dead.
I was, said Butler, heading for the security booth. But I'm better now. Loafers took a small spiral pad from his breast pocket. In it, he had recorded any quips that he felt had really worked in dangerous situations. Snappy dialogue, that was the trademark of a good gangster, according to the movies at any rate. He flicked through the pages, smiling fondly.
It's time to close your account. Permanently.
Larry Ferrigamo, bent banker, 9th of August.
I'm afraid your hard drive has just been wiped.
David Spinsky, computer hacker, 23rd of September.
I'm doing this 'cause I need the dough.
Morty the baker, 17th of July.
It was good material. Maybe he would write his memoirs someday.
Loafers was still chuckling when he heard Mo talking in his earpiece. At first he thought the monkey was speaking to him, but then he realized that his so-called partner was spilling the beans to their pigeon.
You should be thanking me, Mud Boy, said Digence. I came all the way from Chicago to save your life.
To save his life? Mo was working for the other side and the little idiot had forgotten about his mic. Loafers climbed out of the car, being careful to lock it. He would lose the deposit if the rental was stolen, and Miss Frazetti would take it out of his commission. There was a small pedestrian entrance in the wall beside the main gate. Mo Digence had left it open. Loafers slipped through and hurried down the avenue, careful to stay in the shadow of the trees. In his ear, Mo kept rabbiting on. He had laid out their entire plan to the foul kid without so much as a threat of torture. It was completely voluntary. Digence had somehow been working for the Irish kid all along, and what's more, Mo was not Mo, he was Mulch. What kind of name was that? Mulch, who was apparently a fairy dwarf. This was getting weirder and weirder. Maybe the fairy dwarves were some kind of gang. Although it wasn't much of a gang name.
The fairy dwarves were hardly going to strike terror into the hearts of the competition.
Loafers trotted up the avenue, past a line of elegant silver birch, and an honest-to-God croquet pitch. Two peacocks strutted around the edge of the water feature. Loafers snorted, water feature. In the days before TV gardeners, it would have been called a pond. Loafers was wondering where the delivery entrance was when he saw the sign, deliveries at rear. Thank you very much. He checked his silencer and load one more time and tiptoed across the gravel driveway. Artemis sniffed the air.
What's that smell?
Mulch poked his head around the refrigerator door.
Me, I'm afraid, he mumbled,
an unfeasible amount of food revolving inside his mouth.
Sunblock. Disgusting, I know, but I'd smell a whole lot worse without it. I think bacon strips on a flat rock in Death Valley.
Charming image.
Dwarves are subterranean creatures, explained Mulch. Even during the Frond Dynasty, we lived underground.
Frond was the first elfin king. During his reign, fairies and humans had shared the Earth's surface.
Being photosensitive makes it difficult to exist among humans. To be honest, I'm a bit fed up with this life.
Your wish is my command, said a voice.
It was Loafers. He was standing at the kitchen door, brandishing a very large gun. In fairness to Mulch, he recovered well.
I thought I told you to wait outside.
It's true, you did. But I decided to come in anyway, and guess what? No septic tank, no effluent pipe. The back door is wide open.
Mulch tended to grind his teeth when he thought. It sounded like nails being scraped down a chalkboard.
Ah, yes. A stroke of luck there. I took advantage of it, but unfortunately I was interrupted by the boy. I just gained his confidence when you burst in.
Don't bother, said Loafers. Your mic is on. I heard the whole thing, Mo. Or, should I say, Mulch the Fairy Dwarf.
Mulch swallowed the half-chewed mass of food. Once again, his big mouth had gotten him into trouble. Maybe it could get him out of trouble, too. It was just possible that he could unhinge his jaw and swallow the little hitman. He'd eaten bigger. A quick burst of dwarf gas should be enough to propel him across the room. He'd just have to hope that the gun didn't go off before he could pass it.
Loafers caught the look in Mulch's eye.
That's right, little man, he said, cocking his pistol. You go for it. See how far you get.
Artemis was thinking, too. He knew that he was safe for the moment. The newcomer would not harm him against orders. But Mulch's time was running out, and there was no one to save him. Butler was too weak to intervene, even if he'd been there. Holly was away completing the ritual, and Artemis himself was not the best in physical situations. He would have to negotiate.
I know what you're here for, he began. The cube's secrets.
I'll tell you, but not if you harm my friend.
Loafers waved the gun barrel.
You'll do whatever I ask. When I ask. Possibly you'll cry like a girl, too. Sometimes that happens.
Very well. I'll tell you what you want to know. Just don't shoot anyone.
Loafers swallowed a grin.
Sure, that's fine. You just come with me nice and quiet and I won't hurt a soul. You have my word.
Butler entered the kitchen. His face was slick with perspiration and his breath came in short gasps.
I checked the monitor, he said. The car is empty. The other man must be...
Here,
completed Loafers.
Old news to everyone except you, Grandad. Now, no sudden moves and you might not have a heart attack.
Artemis saw Butler's eyes flitting around the room. He was searching for an angle, some way to save them. Maybe yesterday's butler could have done it. But today's butler was 15 years older and not yet fully recovered from magical surgery. The situation was desperate.
You could tie the others up, ventured Artemis. Then we could leave together.
Loafers smacked his own head.
What a great idea! Then maybe I could agree to some other delaying tactic on account of me being a complete amateur.
Loafers felt a shadow fall across his back. He spun round to see a girl standing in the doorway. Another witness. Carla Frazetti would be getting a bill for all these sundries. This whole job had been misrepresented from the start.
Okay, miss, said Loafers. Go join the others and don't do anything stupid.
The girl at the door flicked her hair over one shoulder, blinking her glittering green eyelids.
I don't do stupid things, she said.
And then her hand flicked out, brushing against Loafers' weapon. She grabbed the pistol slide and deftly twisted it from the stock. The gun was now completely useless, except for hammering nails.
Loafers jerked backwards. Hey, watch it! I don't want to wound you by accident. This gun could go off.
That's what he thought. Loafers continued brandishing his piece of harmless metal.
Back off, little girl, I won't say it again.
Juliet dangled the slide under his nose.
Or what? You'll shoot me with this?
Loafers stared cross-eyed at the piece of metal.
Hey, that looks just like...
Then Juliet hit him in the chest so hard he crashed through the breakfast bar. Mulch stared over the unconscious mobster, then at the girl in the doorway.
Hey, Butler, just a shot in the dark here, but I'd say that's your sister.
You're right, said the manservant, hugging Juliet tightly. How on earth did you guess?
Chapter 7 Best Laid Plans Foul Manor. It was time for consultation. That night, the group sat in the manor's conference room facing two monitors that Juliet had brought down from the security booth. Foley had hijacked the monitor's frequency and was broadcasting live images of Commander Root and himself. Much to his own annoyance, Mulch was still present. He had been attempting to weasel some kind of reward from Artemis when Holly returned and cuffed him to a chair. Root's cigar smoke was hazing the screen.
Looks like the gang's all here, he said,
using the fairy gift of tongues to speak English.
And guess what? I don't like gangs.
Holly had placed her headset in the center of the conference table, so all the room's occupants could be picked up.
I can explain, Commander.
Oh, I'll just bet you can. But, strangely, I have a premonition that your explanation is going to cut no ice with me whatsoever, and I will have your badge in my drawer by the end of the shift.
Artemis tried to intervene. Really, Commander, Holly, Captain Short, was only here because I tricked her.
Is that a fact? And then, pray tell, why is she still there? Doing lunch, are we?
This is no time for sarcasm, Commander. We have a serious situation here, potentially disastrous.
Root exhaled a cloud of greenish smoke.
What you humans do to each other is your own affair. We are not your personal police force, Val.
Foley cleared his throat. We're involved, whether we like it or not.
Artemis was the one who pinged us. And that's not the worst of it, Julius.
Root glanced across at the Centaur. Foley had called him by his first name. Things must be serious.
Very well, Captain, he said. Continue with your briefing.
Holly opened a report on her handheld computer.
Yesterday, I responded to a recording from the Sentinel warning system. The call was sent by Artemis Fowl, a mudman well known to the LEP for his part in the Bois Kell uprising. Fowl's associate, Butler, had been mortally injured by another mudman, John Spyro, and he requested my assistance with a healing.
Which you refused, and then requested technical backup to perform a mind wipe, as per regulations.
Holly could have sworn the screen was heating up.
No. Taking into account Butler's considerable assistance during the Goblin Revolution, I performed the healing and transported Butler and Fowl back to their domicile.
Tell me you didn't fly them.
There was no alternative. They were wrapped in cam foil.
Root rubbed his temples.
1 foot. If there was so much as 1 foot sticking out, we could be all over the internet by tomorrow. Holly, why do you do this to me?
Holly didn't reply. What could she say? There's more. We have detained one of Spyro's employees. A nasty piece of work.
Did he see you?
No, but he heard Mulch say that he was a fairy dwarf.
No problem, said Foley. Do a block mind wipe and send him home.
It's not that simple. The man is an assassin. He could be sent back to finish the job. I think we need to relocate him. Believe me, he won't be missed here.
Okay, said Foley. Sedate him, do the wipe, and get rid of anything that might trigger his memories. Then send him somewhere he can't do any harm.
The commander took several long puffs to calm himself.
Okay, tell me about the probe. And if Fowl is responsible, is the alert over?
No, the human businessman, John Spyro, stole the fairy technology from Artemis.
Which Artemis stole from us,
noted Foley.
This Spyro character is determined to acquire the technology's secret, and he's not particular how he gets it, continued Holly.
And who knows the secret? Asked Root.
Artemis is the only one who can operate the C-cube.
Do I want to know what a C-cube is?
Foley took up the narrative.
Artemis cobbled together a microcomputer from old LEP technology. Most of it is obsolete below ground, but by human standards, it's approximately 50 years ahead of their developmental schedule.
And therefore worth a fortune,
concluded the commander.
And therefore worth an absolute fortune,
agreed Foley. Suddenly, Mulch was listening.
A fortune? Exactly how much of a fortune?
Root was relieved to have someone to shout at.
Shut your mouth, convict. This doesn't concern you. You just concentrate on enjoying your last few breaths of free air. This time tomorrow you'll be shaking hands with your cellmate, and I hope he's a trawl.
Mulch was unbound.
Give me a break, Julius. Every time there's a foul situation, I'm the one who says you're sorry-eyed. I have no doubt that whatever plan Artemis concocts will feature yours truly, probably in some ridiculously dangerous capacity.
Root's complexion went from rosé to full-bodied red.
Well, Artemis, do you plan using the convict?
That depends.
On what?
On whether or not you give me Holly.
Root's head disappeared behind a fog of cigar smoke. With the red tip glowing, he looked like a steam train coming out of a tunnel. Some of the smoke drifted across to Foley's screen.
It doesn't look good, commented the Centaur.
Eventually, Root calmed down sufficiently to talk.
Give you Holly? God, give me patience. Have you any idea the amount of red tape I'm ignoring just for this conference?
Quite a lot, I'd imagine.
A mountain of the stuff, Artemis, a mountain! I wouldn't be talking to you at all if it weren't for the Bois Kell thing. If this ever leaked out, I'd end up directing sewage treatment subs in Atlantis.
Mulch winked at the screen.
I probably should have heard that.
The commander ignored him.
You have 30 seconds, Artemis. Sell me.
Artemis rose, standing directly before the screen. Spyro has fairy technology. It's unlikely that he will be able to use it, but it will put his scientists onto iron technology. The man is a megalomaniac, with no respect for life or the environment. Who knows what ghastly machine he will construct from fairy technology? There is also a definite chance that his new technology will lead him to discover Haven itself, and if that happens, the life of every creature on the planet and under it is at risk. Root wheeled his chair off-camera, reappearing in Foley's monitor. He leaned close to the centaur's ear, whispering in low tones.
"It doesn't look good," said Holly. "I could be on the next shuttle home."
Artemis drummed his fingers on the table. It was difficult to see how he could take on Spyro without fairy assistance. After several moments, the commander reappeared in his own screen.
"This is serious. We can't afford to risk that this Spyro person will activate another probe. However small the possibility, there's still a chance. I will have to put together an insertion team. The works. A fully tooled-up retrieval team."
"A full team?" protested Holly. "In an urban area? Commander, you know what retrieval are like. This could turn into a disaster. Let me take a crack at it."
Root considered it.
"It will take 48 hours to clear an operation. So that's what you have. I can cover for you for a couple of days. Diggins can help if he wants. It's his choice. I might drop a couple of the burglary charges. But he's still facing 5 to 10 for the bullion robbery. That's all I can do. If you fail, then the retrieval team are waiting in the wings."
Artemis thought about it.
"Very well."
Root took a breath.
"There is a condition."
"I thought as much," said Artemis. "You want a mind wipe, correct?"
"That's right, Artemis. You're becoming a severe liability to the people. If we are to assist you in this matter, then you and your staff would have to submit to mind wipes."
"And if we don't?"
"Then we go straight to Plan B and you get wiped anyway."
"No offense, Commander, but this is a technical matter."
Foley stepped in.
"There are two kinds of mind wipe. A block wipe, which takes out everything in the chosen period. Holly could do that with the equipment in her bag. And a fine-tune wipe, which only deletes certain memories. This is a more specialized procedure, but there is less danger of a drop in IQ. We do a fine-tuned wipe on all of you. I detonate a data charge in your computer system that automatically deletes any fairy-related files. Also, I will need your permission to do a sweep of your house, just in case there is any fairy memorabilia lying around. In practical terms, you will wake up the day after this operation with absolutely no record or memory of the fairy people."
"You're talking about nearly 2 years of memories."
"You won't miss them. Your brain will invent some new ones to fill the gaps."
It was a tough decision. On the one hand, his knowledge of the fairy people was now a large part of Artemis' psychological makeup. On the other, he could no longer put people's lives at risk.
"Very well," said the teenager. "I accept your offer."
Root tossed the cigar into a nearby incinerator.
"Okay, then. We have a deal. Captain Short, keep a channel open at all times."
"Yes, sir."
"Holly."
"Commander?"
"Be careful on this one. Your career won't survive another blow."
"Understood, sir," said Holly.
"Oh, and convict!"
Mulch sighed.
"You mean me, I suppose, Julius?"
Root scowled.
"It's over, Mulch. You won't escape again, so get your brain ready for cold food and hard walls."
Mulch stood, presenting his back to the screen. Somehow, the bum flap on his specially adapted tunneling trousers flopped open, presenting the commander with a lovely view of his rear end. In the dwarf world, presenting your behind was the ultimate insult, as it is in most cultures. Commander Root terminated the link. After all, there was no comeback from an affront like that. West of Wajir, Kenya, East Africa. Lofus Maguire woke up with a debilitating headache. It was so painful that he felt obliged to come up with some imagery in case he had to describe it later. His head felt, he decided, like there was an angry porcupine crawling around inside his cranium. Not bad, he thought. I should put that in the book. Then he thought, what's a book? His next thought was, who am I? Shoes. Something to do with shoes. It is always this way when memory implant subjects first regain consciousness. The old identity hangs around for a few moments, trying to assert itself until outside stimuli wash it away. Lofus sat up, and the porcupine went crazy, jamming needles into every square inch of his soft brain tissue.
"Oh!" groaned Lofus.
cradling his aching skull. What did all this mean? Where was he? And how did he get here?
Loafers looked at his arms. For a second, his brain projected tattoos onto the skin, but the images quickly disappeared. His skin was unblemished. Sunlight rolled across his forearms like white lightning. All around him was scrubland. Terracotta earth stretched away to indigo hills in the distance. A golden disk of sun blasted cracks in the shimmering earth. Two figures ran through the heat waves, elegant as cheetahs. The men were giants, easily 7 feet tall. Each one carried an oval hide shield and a thin spear and a mobile phone. Their hair, necks and ears were ordained with multicolored beads. Loafers jumped to his feet. Feet, which he noticed, were clad in leather sandals. The men were wearing Nikes.
Help! He cried. Help me!
The men altered their course, jogging across to the confused mobster.
Jumbo, brother, are you lost? Asked one.
I'm sorry, said Loafers in perfect Swahili. I don't speak Swahili.
The man glanced at his partner.
I see, and what is your name?
Loafers, said Loafer's brain.
Nuru,
said his mouth.
Well, Nuru, unatoka wapi. Where are you from?
The words were out before Loafers could do anything about it.
I don't know where I'm from, but I want to go with you, to your village. That's where I should be.
The Kenyan warriors stared down at the little stranger. He was the wrong color, true, but he seemed sane enough. The taller of the two unhooked a mobile phone from his leopard-skin belt. He punched in the village chieftain's number.
Jambo, chief. This is Bobby. The earth spirits have left us another one.
Bobby laughed, looking Loafers up and down.
Yes, he's tiny, but he looks strong, and he's got a smile bigger than a peeled banana.
Loafers stretched his smile, just in case it was a factor. For some reason, all he wanted in this world was to go to the village and live a productive life.
Okay, chief, I'll bring him in. He can have the missionary's old hut.
Bobby clipped the phone back onto his belt.
Very well, Brother Nuru. You're in. Follow us. Try to keep up.
The warriors set off at a brisk run. Loafers, henceforth to be known as Nuru, raced after them, his leather sandals flapping beneath his feet. He really would have to see about getting a pair of trainers. 50 meters over their heads, Captain Holly Short hovered shielded from view, recording the entire incident. Relocation complete, she said into her helmet mic. The subject has been adopted successfully. No apparent signs of original personality, but he will be monitored at monthly intervals, just in case. Foley was on the other end of the line.
Excellent, Captain. Return to shuttleport E-77 immediately. If you open the throttle, you might just make the evening shuttle, and we'll have you back in Ireland in a couple of hours.
Holly did not need to be told twice. It wasn't often you got clearance for a speed run. She activated her radar in case of buzzards and set the stopwatch on her visor.
Now, she said, let's see if we can't break the airspeed record.
A record that Julius Root had set 80 years ago. Part 2. Counterattack. Chapter 8. Hooks, Lines, and Sinkers. Excerpt from Artemis Fowl's diary, Disc 2. Encrypted. Today, Father was fitted for his prosthetic limb. He joked through the entire process, as though he were being measured for a new suit on Grafton Street. I must admit, his good humour was infectious, and I found myself making excuses just to sit in the corner of the hospital room and enjoy his presence. It wasn't always this way. In the past, one needed valid grounds to visit my father. Of course, he wasn't generally available, and even when he was, his time was limited. One did not burst into the Fowl study without good reason, but now I feel welcome at his side. It's a nice feeling. My father always liked to impart wisdom, but now it is more philosophical than financial. In the old days, he would direct my attention to the latest share prices in the Financial Times.
Look, Artemis, he would say, everything else falls but gold stays steady. That is because there's not enough of it. And there never will be. Buy gold, boy. Keep it safe.
I like to listen to these pearls of wisdom, but now they are harder to understand. On the third day of his consciousness, I fell asleep on the hospital bed, while my father did his walking exercises.
I woke to find him looking at me thoughtfully. "Shall I tell you something, Artie?" he said. I nodded, unsure what to expect. While I was a prisoner, I thought about my life, how I had wasted it gathering riches, whatever the cost to my family and others around me. In a man's life, he gets few chances to make a difference, to do the right thing, to be a hero, if you will. I intend to become involved in that struggle. This was not the kind of wisdom I was accustomed to hearing from my father. Was this his natural personality, or the fairy magic, or a combination of both? I never got involved before. I always thought the world would not be changed. Father's gaze was intense, burning with new passion. But things are different now. My priorities are different. I intend to seize the day, be the hero that every father should be. He sat on the bed beside me. And what about you, Artie? Will you make the journey with me? When the moment comes, will you take your chance to be a hero? I couldn't respond. I didn't know the answer. I still don't.
Foul Manor. For 2 hours, Artemis locked himself in his study, sitting cross-legged in the meditative position taught to him by Butler. Occasionally he would voice an idea aloud, to be picked up by a voice-activated digital recorder placed on the mat before him. Butler and Juliet knew better than to interrupt the planning process. This period was crucial to the success of their mission. Artemis had the ability to visualize a hypothetical situation and calculate the likely outcomes. It was almost a dream state, and any disturbance could send the thread of his ideas flying like vapors. Eventually, Artemis emerged, tired, but satisfied. He held 3 CD writable discs.
"I want you to study these files," he said. "They contain details of your assignment. When you've memorized the contents, destroy the discs."
Holly took the discs. "A CD? How quaint. We have these in museums."
"There are several computers in the study," continued Artemis. "Use any terminal you wish."
Butler was empty-handed.
"Nothing for me, Artemis," he asked.
Artemis waited until the others had gone.
"I need to give you your instructions verbally," he began. "I don't want to risk Foley picking them up from the computer."
Butler sighed deeply, sinking into a leather armchair by the fireplace.
"I'm not going with you, am I?"
Artemis sat on the chair's arm.
"No, old friend. But I have an important task for you."
"Really, Artemis?" said Butler. "I've skipped right over my midlife crisis. You don't have to invent a job just to make me feel useful."
"No, Butler. This is of vital importance. It concerns the mind wipes. If my plan succeeds, we will have to submit to them. I see no way to sabotage the process itself, so I must ensure that something survives Foley's search. Something that will trigger our memories of the people. Foley once told me that a strong enough stimulus can result in total recall."
Butler shifted his position in the chair, wincing. His chest was still giving him trouble. Not surprising, really. He'd been alive less than 2 days.
"Any ideas?"
"We need to lay a couple of false trails. Foley will be expecting that."
"Of course. A hidden file on the server. I could send an email to ourselves but not pick it up. Then the first time we check our mail, all this information will come through."
Artemis handed the bodyguard a folded sheet of A4.
"No doubt we will be mesmerized and questioned. In the past we have hidden from the mesmer behind mirrored sunglasses. We won't get away with that on this occasion, so we need to come up with something else. Here are the instructions."
Butler studied the plans.
"That's possible. I know someone in Limerick. The best man in the country for this kind of specialized work."
"Excellent," said Artemis. "After that, you need to put everything we have on the people on a disc. All documents, videos, schematics, everything. And don't forget my diary, the whole story's there."
"And where do we hide this disc?" asked the ex-bodyguard.
Artemis untied the fairy pendant from around his neck.
"I would say this was about the same size as the disc, wouldn't you?"
Butler tucked the gold medallion into his jacket pocket.
"It soon will be,"
he said.
Butler prepared them a meal. Nothing fancy. Vegetarian spring rolls followed by mushroom risotto with creme caramel to finish. Mulch opted for a bucket of diced worms and beetles, sautéed in rainwater and moss vinaigrette.
"Has everybody studied their files?"
Artemis asked, when the group had adjourned to the library. "Yes," said Holly, "but I seem to be missing a few key pieces. Nobody has the entire plan.
just the parts concerning them. I think it's safer that way. Do we have the equipment I specified?
Holly dumped the contents of her pack on the rug. A complete LEP surveillance kit, including camouflage foil, mics and video clips, and a first aid box.
Plus, we still have 2 intact LEP helmets and 3 laser handguns left over from the siege, added Butler. And, of course, 1 of the prototype cubes from the lab.
Artemis passed the cordless phone to Mulch.
Very well, then. We may as well get started.
The Spyro Needle. John Spyro sat in his opulent office, staring glumly at the C-cube on his desk. People thought it was easy being him. How little they knew. The more money you had, the more pressure you were under. He had 800 employees in this building alone, all relying on him for a paycheck. They wanted yearly salary reviews, medical plans, baby care centres, regular coffee breaks, double pay for overtime, and even stock options, for heaven's sake. Sometimes Spyro missed the times when a troublesome worker was thrown out of a high window and that was the end of him. These days, if you threw someone out of a window, they'd phone their lawyer on the way down. But this cube could be the answer to his prayers. A once-in-a-lifetime deal. The brass ring. If he could get this weird little gizmo working, the sky was the limit. Literally. The world's satellites would be to his command. He would have complete control over spy satellites, military lasers, communication networks, and, most important of all, television stations. He could, feasibly, rule the world. His secretary buzzed from reception.
Mr. Blunt to see you, sir.
Spyro jabbed the intercom button.
Okay, Marlene, send him in. And tell him he'd better look sorry.
Blunt did indeed look sorry when he pushed through the double doors. The doors themselves were imposing enough. Spyro had them stolen from the ballroom of the sunken Titanic. They were a perfect example of power gone mad. Arno Blunt was not quite so cocky as he had been in London. Then again, it is difficult to look arrogant when your forehead is a mass of bruises and your mouth is full of gums and nothing else. Spyro winced at the sight of his sunken cheeks.
How many teeth did you lose?
Blunt touched his jaw gingerly.
All of them. Dennis said the roots are shattered.
It serves you right, said Spyro matter-of-factly.
What have I got to do, Arno? I hand you Artemis Fowl on a platter and you mess it up. Tell me what happened, and I don't want to hear about any earthquakes. I want the truth.
Blunt wiped a blob of drool from the corner of his mouth.
I don't understand it. Something exploded. I don't know what. Some kind of shung grenade. But I tell you something. Butler is dead. I shot him in the head. No way he's gonna get up after that.
Oh, shut up, snapped Spyro. You're giving me a headache. The sooner you get those new teeth, the better.
My gums will be healed sufficiently by this afternoon.
I thought I told you to shut up.
Sorry, boss.
You put me in a very difficult situation, Arno. Because of your incompetence, I had to hire a team from the Antonellis. Carla's a smart girl. She could decide that they deserve a percentage. It could cost me billions.
Arno tried his best to look remorseful.
And don't bother with that puppy dog look, Blunt. Doesn't cut any ice with me. If this deal goes south, you'll be losing a lot more than a couple of teeth.
Arno decided to change the subject.
Sir, did your scientists get the cube working?
No, said Spyro, twisting his gold identity bracelet. Fowler sealed it up tight. An eternity code or some such thing. That idiot Pearson couldn't get a peep out of it.
It was at that moment, dramatically, that a voice emanated from the C-Cube's microspeaker mesh.
Mr. Spyro, said the voice. This is Island calling. Do you read, Mr. Spyro?
John Spyro was not a man who spooked easily. He hadn't seen a horror movie yet that could make him jump in his seat. But the voice coming out of that speaker almost knocked him off his chair. The quality was incredible. Close your eyes and you'd swear that the person speaking was standing right in front of you.
You want me to answer that?
I told you to shut up. Anyway, I don't know how to answer this thing. I can hear you, Mr. Spyro, said the voice. You don't need to do anything, just talk. This box does the rest.
Spyro noticed that a digital wave meter had appeared on the cube's screen. When he spoke, it registered.
Okay, then. We got communication. Now, who the hell are you? And how did you get this box working? The name is Mo Digence, Mr. Spyro. I'm the monkey from Carla Frazetti's team. I don't know what kind of a box you have at your end. I just have a plain old telephone.
Well, who dialed the number, then?
Little kid I have here by the scruff of the neck. I impressed upon him how important it was that I talk to you. And how did you know to talk to me? Who gave you my name? Again, the kid. He was very eager to tell me everything after he saw what I did to the Metal Man.
Spyro sighed. If the Metal Man was damaged, he would have to pay the Antonellis a fine.
What did you do to the Metal Man? Nothing permanent, but he won't be aiming any guns at Keds for a while.
Why did you feel it necessary to damage your own partner, Digents? There was a pause on the other end while Mulch got the supposed sequence of events sorted out.
It was like this, Mr. Spyro. Our instructions were to escort the kid across to the U.S., but Loafers goes crazy, starts waving a gun about. I figured this was the wrong way to go, so I stopped him. Forcibly. Anyway, the kid gets so scared that he tells me everything I want to know. And here I am now, having a conversation with you.
Spyro rubbed his hands together.
You did the right thing, Digents. There'll be a bonus in this for you. I'll see to it personally. Thanks, Mr. Spyro. Believe me, the pleasure was mine. Is the foul kid there? Right beside me. Little pale, but not a scratch on him. Put him on, ordered Spyro,
all traces of depression vanishing.
Spyro, it's me.
Artemis's voice was aloof, but with an unmistakable tremor.
Spyro squeezed the air, as though it was Artemis's neck. Not so cocky now, kid. It's like I told you, you don't have the guts for this job. Me, on the other hand, if I don't get what I want, then I'll have Mo put you out of my misery. Do we understand each other?
Yes. Loud and clear.
Good, said Spyro, clamping a huge Cuban cigar between his teeth.
It will be chewed to a pulp, but not lit.
Now, talk. What do I have to do to get this cube working?
Artemis's voice sounded even shakier than before.
It's not that simple, Mr. Spyro. The C-cube is coded. Something called an Eternity Code. I can remotely access certain basic functions, the phone, MP3 player and so on, but to disable the code completely and to unlock the cube's potential, I need to have it here, in front of me. If you could just bring the cube here...
Spyro spat out the cigar. Hold it right there, foul. Just how stupid do you think I am? I'm going to bring this priceless technology back to Europe? Forget it! If you're going to disable this thing, you're going to do it here, in the Spyro Needle.
But my tools, my lab.
I got tools here, and a lab, the best in the world. You do it here.
Yes. Whatever you say.
That's right, kid. Whatever I say. I want you to fuel up the Learjet I happen to know you have. And do a quick hop across to O'Hare Airport. I'll have a chopper waiting for you.
I don't suppose I have a choice.
That's right, kid, you don't. And do this right, and I might just let you go. Did you get all that, Digents? Loud and clear, Mr. Spyro. Good. I'm counting on you to get the key to her safely. Consider it done.
The line went dead. Spyro chuckled.
I think I'm gonna celebrate, he said, punching the intercom button. Marlene, send in a pot of coffee, and no low-caffeine junk either. I want the real thing.
But, Mr. Spyro, your doctor said...
Spyro waited for his secretary to realize who she was arguing with.
I'm sorry, sir. Right away, sir.
Spyro leaned back in his chair, lacing his fingers behind his head.
You see, Blunt, this is going to turn out fine, in spite of your incompetence. I got that kid just where I want him.
Yes, sir. Masterfully done, sir.
Spyro laughed.
Shut up, you clown. You sound like some cartoon character.
Yes, most amusing, sir.
Spyro licked his lips, anticipating his coffee. For a supposed genius, that kid sure is gullible.
Do this right and I might just let you go. He fell for that one hook, line, and sinker.
Blunt tried to grin. It was not a pretty sight.
Yes, Mr. Spyro, hook, line, and sinker.
Foul Manor. Artemis hung up the phone, his face flushed with the thrill of the sting.
What do you think?
He asked.
I think he bought it, replied Butler. Hook, line and sinker, added Mulch.
You have a jet.
I presume there's a kitchen.
Butler drove them to Dublin Airport in the Bentley. It was to be his final act in this particular operation. Holly and Mulch huddled in the back, glad of the tinted glass. The Butler siblings sat up front, dressed in corresponding black Armani suits. Juliet had jazzed hers up with a pink cravat and glitter makeup. The family resemblance was clear. The same narrow nose and full lips. The same eyes jumping in their sockets like roulette balls in the wheel. Watching. Always watching.
You don't need a traditional gun on this trip, said Butler. Use an LEP blaster. They don't need reloading. They shoot in a straight line forever. And they're non-lethal. I gave Holly a couple from my stash.
Got it, Dom. Butler took the airport exit.
Dom, I haven't been called that in so long. Being a bodyguard becomes your world. You forget to have your own life. Are you sure that's what you want, Juliet?
Juliet was twining her hair in a tight braid. At the end of the plait, she attached an ornamental jade ring. Ornamental. And dangerous. Where else would I get to body slam people outside of a wrestling ring? Bodyguarding fits the bill. For the moment.
Butler lowered his voice. Of course, it's completely against protocol for you to have Artemis as your principal. He already knows your first name, and, truth be told, I think he's a little fond of you.
Juliet slapped the jade ring against her palm. This is just temporary. I'm not anybody's bodyguard just yet. Madame Coe doesn't like my style.
I'm not surprised, said Butler, pointing to the jade ring. Where did you get that?
Juliet smiled. My own idea. A nice little surprise for anyone who underestimates females. Butler pulled into the set-down area.
Listen to me, Juliet, he said, catching his sister's hand. Spyro is dangerous. Look what happened to me. And, in all modesty, I was the best. If this mission weren't so vital to humans and fairies, I wouldn't let you go at all.
Juliet touched her brother's face. I will be careful.
They climbed onto the walkway. Holly hovered, shielded, just above the throngs of business travellers and holidaymakers. Mulch had applied a fresh layer of sunblock, and the stink repelled every human who was unfortunate enough to pick up his scent.
Butler touched Artemis's shoulder.
Are you going to be all right?
Artemis shrugged. I honestly don't know. Without you by my side, I feel as though one of my limbs is missing.
Juliet will keep you safe. She has an unusual style, but she is a butler, after all.
It's one mission, old friend. Then there will be no more need for bodyguards.
That's a pity Holly couldn't have simply mesmerized Spyro through the cube.
Artemis shook his head. It wouldn't have worked. Even if we could have set up a link, a fairy needs eye-to-eye contact to mesmerize a strong mind like Spyro's. I don't want to take any chances with this man. He needs to be put away. Even if the fairies relocated him, he could do some damage.
What about your plan? Butler asked. From what you told me, it's quite convoluted. Are you sure it's going to work?
Artemis winked. A very unusual display of levity.
I'm sure, he said. Trust me. I'm a genius.
Juliet piloted the Learjet across the Atlantic. Holly sat in the co-pilot's chair, admiring the hardware. Nice bird, she commented. Not bad, fairy girl, said Juliet, switching to autopilot. Not a patch on fairy craft, I bet. The LEP don't believe in comfort, said Holly. There's barely enough room in an LEP shuttle to swing a stinkworm. If you wanted to swing a stinkworm. True, Holly studied the pilot. You've grown a lot in 2 years. The last time I saw you, you were a little girl. Juliet smiled. A lot gonna happen in 2 years. I spent most of that time wrestling big, hairy men.
You should see fairy wrestling. Two pumped-up gnomes having it out in a zero-G chamber. Not a pretty sight. I'll send you a video disc.
No, you won't. Holly remembered the mind wipes. You're right, she said.
No, I won't.
In the passenger section of the Learjet, Mulch was reliving his glory days.
Hey, Artemis, he said, through a mouthful of caviar. Remember the time I nearly blew Butler's head off with a blast of gas?
Artemis did not smile. I remember, Mulch. You were the spanner in an otherwise perfect works.
To tell you the truth, it was an accident. I was just nervous. I didn't even realize the big guy was there.
That makes me feel better. Scuppered by a bowel problem.
And do you remember the time I saved your neck in Cowboy Laboratories? If it hadn't been for me, you'd be locked up in Howler's Peak right now. Can't you do anything without me?
Artemis sipped mineral water from a crystal flute. Apparently not, though I live for the day. Holly made her way back through the aisle. We better get you kitted out, Artemis. We land in 30 minutes.
Good idea.
Holly emptied the bag's contents onto the central table. Okay, what do we need for now? The throat mic and an iris camera. The LEP captain selected what looked like a circular adhesive bandage from the pile. She peeled back the adhesive layer and stuck the material to Artemis's neck. It immediately turned the colour of his skin.
Memory latex, explained Holly. It's almost invisible. Maybe an ant crawling up your neck might notice it, but apart from that...
The material is also X-ray proof, so the mic is undetectable.
It'll pick up whatever is said in a 10-meter radius, and I record it on my helmet chip.
Unfortunately, we can't risk an earpiece. Too visible. So, we can hear you, but you won't be able to hear us.
Artemis swallowed, feeling the mic ride on his Adam's apple.
And the camera.
Here we go.
Holly removed a contact lens from a jar of fluid.
This thing is a marvel. We've got a high-resolution, digital-quality, recordable picture with several filter options, including magnification and thermal.
Mulch sucked a chicken bone dry. You're starting to sound like Foley.
Artemis stared at the lens.
A technological marvel it may be, but it's Hazel.
Well, of course it's Hazel. My eyes are Hazel.
I'm glad to hear it, Holly, but my eyes are blue, as you well know. This iris cam will not do.
Don't look at me like that, mud boy. You're the genius.
I can't go in there with one brown eye and one blue eye. Spyro will notice.
Well, you should have thought of that while you were meditating. It's a little late now.
Artemis pinched the bridge of his nose.
You're right, of course. I am the mastermind here. Thinking is my responsibility, not yours.
Holly squinted suspiciously.
Was that an insult, mud boy?
Mulch spat the chicken bone into a nearby bin.
I have to tell you, Artie, cock up this early in the proceedings doesn't exactly fill me with confidence. I hope you're as clever as you keep telling everyone you are.
I never tell anybody exactly how clever I am. They would be too scared. Very well, we will have to risk the Hazel Iris cam. With any luck, Spyro might not notice. If he does, I can invent some excuse.
Holly placed the camera on the tip of her finger, sliding the lens under Artemis's lid.
It's your decision, Artemis, she said. I just hope you haven't met your match in John Spyro.
11 PM, O'Hare Airport, Chicago.
Spyro was waiting for them at O'Hare's private hangar. He wore a fur-collared greatcoat over his trademark white suit. Halogen lamps blasted the tarmac, and the downdraft from the chopper blades snagged his coattails. It was all very cinematic.
All we need now is background music, thought Artemis as he descended the motorized steps.
As per instructions, Mulch was putting on the gangster act.
Move it, cad,
he snarled quite convincingly.
We don't want to keep Mr. Spyro waiting.
Artemis was about to respond when he realized that he was supposed to be the terrified kid. It wasn't going to be easy. Being humble was a real problem for Artemis Fowl.
I said move it,
repeated the dwarf, stressing the point with a firm shove. Artemis stumbled the last few steps, almost colliding with a grinning Arno Blunt, and this was no ordinary grin. Blunt's teeth had been replaced by a custom-crafted porcelain set. The tips had been filed to sharp points. The bodyguard looked for all the world like a human-shark hybrid. Blunt caught Artemis's stare.
You like 'em? I got other sets too. One is all flat, for crushing stuff.
A cynical sneer was forming on Artemis's mouth before he remembered his role, replacing the sneer with a set of quivering lips. He was basing his performance on the effect Butler usually had on people. Spyro was not impressed.
Nice acting, sonny, but pardon me if I doubt the great Artemis Fowl has fallen to pieces quite so easily. Arno, check the plane.
Blunt nodded curtly, ducking inside the private jet. Juliet was dressed in a flight attendant's uniform and was straightening the headrest covers. For all her athletic ability, she was finding it difficult not to fall out of her high heels.
Where's the pilot?
Growled Blunt, living up to his name.
Master Artemis flies the plane, replied Juliet. He's been flying it since he was 11 years old.
Ah, really? Is that legal?
Juliet put on her best innocent face.
I don't know about legal, mister. I just serve the drinks.
Blunt grunted, charming as ever, and had a quick poke about the jet's interior. Eventually, he decided to accept the flight attendant's word. Lucky for him, because had he decided to argue, two things would have happened. First, Juliet would have clobbered him with the jade ring, and second, Holly, who was lying shielded in an overhead locker, would have blasted him into unconsciousness with her Neutrino 2000. Of course, Holly could simply have mesmerized the bodyguard, but after what he had done to Butler, a blasting seemed more appropriate. Blunt stuck his head through the hatch.
No one in there except some dumb attendant.
Spyro was not surprised.
I didn't think so, but they're here somewhere. Believe it or not, Digents, Artemis Fowl did not get suckered by a goon like you. He's here because he wants to be here.
Artemis was not surprised by this deduction. It was only natural that Spyro should be suspicious.
I don't know what you mean, he said. I'm here because this odious little man threatened to crush my skull between his teeth. Why else would I come? The C-cube is useless to you, and I could easily construct another one.
Spyro was not even listening.
Yeah, yeah, whatever you say, kid. But let me tell you something. You bit off more than you could chew when you agreed to come here. The Spyro Needle has the best security on the planet. We got stuff in there that even the military don't have. Once those doors close behind you, you're on your own. Nobody is coming to save you. Nobody. Understand?
Artemis nodded. He understood what Spyro was saying to him. That wasn't to say that he agreed with it. John Spyro may have stuff that the military didn't have, but Artemis Fowl had stuff the humans had never seen. A Sikorsky executive helicopter whisked them downtown to the Spyro Needle. They landed on a helipad on the skyscraper's roof. Artemis was familiar with helicopter controls and realized how difficult it must be to land in the bluster of the Windy City.
Wind speed must be treacherous at this altitude,
he said casually. Holly could record the information on her helmet chip.
You're telling me, shouted the pilot over the rotor's din. It gets over 60 miles an hour on top of the needle. The helipad can sway up to 10 meters in rough conditions.
Spyro groaned, giving Blunt a nod. Arno reached forward and whacked the pilot's helmet.
Shut up, you moron, snapped Spyro. Why didn't you give him the blueprints to the building while you're at it?
He turned to Artemis. And in case you're wondering, Artie, there aren't any blueprints floating around. Anybody who goes looking in City Hall is going to find the file mysteriously missing. I have the only set, so don't bother getting one of your associates to do an internet search. No surprises there. Artemis had already run several searches himself, although he hadn't really expected Spyro to be so careless. They climbed down from the Sikorsky. Artemis was careful to point the iris cam at any security feature that could be useful later. Butler had often told him that even a seemingly insignificant detail, like the number of steps in a stairwell, could be vital when planning an operation. A lift brought them down from the helipad to a key-coded door. Closed-circuit cameras were strategically placed to cover the entire rooftop. Spyro moved ahead to the keypad. Artemis felt a sharp sting in his eye, and suddenly the iris cam magnified his vision by 4. In spite of the distance and shadows, he could easily discern the entry code.
I hope you got that,
he muttered, feeling the mic vibrating on his throat. Arno bent his knees, so his extraordinary teeth were a centimeter from Artemis's nose.
Are you talking to someone?
Me, said Artemis. Who would I be talking to? We're 80 floors up, in case you hadn't noticed.
Blunt grabbed the teenager by the lapels, hoisting him off the tarmac.
Well, maybe you're wearing a wire. Maybe you have someone listening to us right now.
How could I be wearing a wire, you big oaf? Your miniature hitman hasn't let me out of his sight for the entire journey. He even accompanied me to the bathroom.
Spyro cleared his throat noisily.
Hey there, mister, I gotta make my point. That kid slips over the side and you might as well throw yourself off, because that boy is worth more to me than an army of bodyguards.
Blunt set Artemis down. You're not going to be valuable forever, Fal, he whispered ominously. And when your stock falls, I'll be waiting. They took a mirrored lift to the 85th floor, where Dr. Pearson waited, along with 2 more muscle-bound minders. Artemis could tell by the look in their eyes that these 2 weren't exactly brain surgeons. In fact, they were as close as you could get to Rottweilers still balanced on 2 legs. It was probably handy to have them around to break things and not ask questions. Spyro called one of them over.
Pex, do you know what the Antonellis charge if you lose their personnel?
Pex had to consider it for a moment. His lips moved as he thought.
I got it. 20 grand for a metal man, and 15 for a monkey.
That's dead, right?
Dead or broken.
Okay, said Spyro. I want you and Chips to go over to Carla Frazetti's, and tell her I owe her 35 grand for the team. I'll wire it to her Cayman account in the morning.
Mulch was understandably curious, and not a little apprehensive.
Excuse me, 35 grand, but I'm still alive. You only owe 20 grand for loafers, unless the extra 15K is my bonus.
Spyro sighed with almost convincing regret.
This is the way it is, Mo,
he said, punching Mulch playfully on the shoulder.
This deal is huge. Mammoth. We're talking telephone numbers. I can't afford any loose ends. Maybe you know something, maybe you don't. But I'm not about to take the chance that you might tip off Phonetics or one of my other competitors. I'm sure you understand.
Mulch stretched his lips, revealing a row of tombstone teeth.
I understand, all right, Spyro. You're a backstabbing snake. You know the kid offered me $2 million to cut him loose?
You should have taken the cash,
said Arno Blunt, propelling Mulch into Pex's gigantic arms. The dwarf kept talking, even as he was being dragged down the corridor.
You better bury me deep, Spyro! You better bury me real deep!
Spyro's eyes narrowed to wet slits.
You heard the men, boys, before you go to Frazetti's. Bury him deep.
Dr. Pearson led the party through to the vault room. They had to pass through a small antechamber before entering the main security area.
Please stand on the scanner pad, said Pearson. We wouldn't want any bugs in here, especially not the electronic kind.
Artemis stepped onto the mat. It sank like a sponge beneath his feet, spurting jets of foam over his shoes.
Anti-infection foam, explained Pearson. Kills any virus you might have picked up. We're keeping some biotechnology experiments in the vault at the moment. Very susceptible to disease. The foam has the added advantage of shorting out any surveillance devices in your shoes.
Overhead, a mobile scanner bathed Artemis's frame in purple light.
One of my own inventions, said Pearson. A combination scanner. I have incorporated thermal, X-ray, and metal detector beams. The beam basically breaks your body down into its elements and displays them on the screen here.
Artemis saw a 3D replica of himself being traced out on a small plasma screen. He held his breath, praying that Foley's equipment was as clever as a centaur thought it was. On screen, a red light pulsed on Artemis's jacket front.
Aha,
said Dr. Pearson, plucking off a button.
What have we here?
He cracked the button open, revealing a tiny chip, mic, and power source.
Very clever, a microbug. Our young friend was attempting to spy on us, Mr. Spyro.
John Spyro was not angry. In fact, he was delighted to have the opportunity to gloat.
You see, kid, you may be some kind of genius, but surveillance and espionage are my business. You can't slip anything past me, and the sooner you accept that, the sooner we get this thing over with.
Artemis stepped off the pad. The decoy had worked, and the real bugs hadn't caused a blip in the system. Pearson was smart, but Foley was smarter. Artemis made sure to have a good look around the antechamber. There was more here. Every square centimeter of the metal surface contained a security or surveillance device. From what Artemis could see, an invisible ant would have trouble sneaking in here, not to mention two humans, an elf, and a dwarf, assuming the dwarf survived pecks and chips. The vault itself was impressive. Most corporate vaults looked impressive, plenty of chrome and keypads, but that was just to make an impression on stockholders. In Spyro's vault, there wasn't a tumbler out of place. Artemis spotted the very latest computer lock on the face of titanium double doors. Spyro keyed in another complicated series of numbers, and the meter-thick doors slid back to reveal another barrier, the secondary door.
Imagine you're a thief, said Spyro,
an actor introducing a play,
and you somehow got into the building, past the electronic eyes and the locked doors. Then imagine you somehow cheat the lasers, the sensor pad, and the door code, and open the first vault door. An impossible feat, by the way. And while we're imagining all this, let's pretend you disable a half dozen cameras, and even then, even after all that, would you be able to do this?
Spyro stood on a small red dot painted on the floor in front of the door. He placed a thumb on a gel print scanner, held his left eyelid open, and enunciated clearly.
John Spyro, I am the boss, so open up quick.
Four things happened. A retinal scanner filmed his left eye and fed the image into the computer. A print plate scanned his right thumb, and a vocal analyzer scrutinized Spyro's accent, timbre, and intonations.
Once the computer had verified all this information, the alarms were deactivated and the secondary door slid open to reveal an expansive vault. In the very middle, in the center of a custom-made steel column, rested the C-cube. It was in